Our reading this morning are words by my colleague, UU Minister Reverend Marisol Caballero. She writes, "Everyone needs comadres y compadres. What are those? Well, Latinx people have way more relatives than many other families. Most people attribute this to the fact that many Latinx are Catholic and therefore frown on contraception, but this is only part of the truth. The rest of the story is that we're related to people that non-Spanish speakers are not. In English, for example, your siblings aren't related to your spouse's siblings at all. They might see one another at large family gatherings, but your sister's brother-in-law is hers, with no relation to you. In Spanish, however, your siblings' siblings-in-law are your concuñados or concuñadas. Your child's spouse's parents, in English, are your child's mother and father-in-law. They relate to you mainly for the purposes of divvying up wedding expenses, holidays with the grandkids, and maybe, if you become good friends, some commiseration over your neglectful children. There's a good deal of talk at weddings about two families becoming one, but these people will still always be your child's in-laws and your grandchildren's other grandparents. In Spanish, they're as related to you as your grandkids, and they're called in some dialects your consuegros y consuegras, and in others your compadres y comadres. I love this concept," she writes. "Technically, it means your child's godparents, but the words literally mean co-father and co-mother. Comadre y compadre are terms used liberally. Beyond their technical or even literal meaning, they're even used between extremely close adult friends who may not have any children at all, as they're co-parenting, co-nurturing each other's stages of life as much as anyone else's. They're the kinds of friends whose doors you don't have to knock on, the friends whose refrigerators are stocked for your free grazing. They will show up in a crisis. They will love you unconditionally. Years can pass without speaking, and you pick up right where you left off. They see you beyond failed marriages and career achievements. They understand that you have helped to form them, and they you. They are family, as much as, and sometimes more, than blood relatives. Everyone needs comadres y compadres." I am the youngest in my family. This means that, for the first few years of my life, my older sisters were off at school and my mother was home with me. And when I think back to those years, or what I can remember at least, I remember going out to breakfast. My mother had good friends with children who were just a little older than me, and that meant that we went out to breakfast a lot with these women. Alice and Judy, my mother and me, chit-chatting about life. And this was before iPads or anything like that, so I entertained myself by opening up those little packets of jelly and eating them one by one throughout the entire meal, straight from the package. I attribute these morning trips, these breakfast times, to my continued affinity to going out to breakfast, chatting with good friends, and scrambled eggs with cheese on top, which I was convinced I invented. These women were my mother's friends. They were her confidants, and in many ways, they became her comadres. They were like aunts to me, coming to my concerts and games when I was growing up, my graduation parties, my wedding, my ordination. The names Alice and Judy are household names for us. They were when we were growing up, they still are. Nearly 40 years of friendship for my mother and love and care for my father and me and my sisters. Alice died this year, suddenly, and I wasn't able to go to her services, which was hard for me. This person was a big part of my life. I wasn't able to be there. She was part of my heart, part of my family, and I wonder if she knew that. In our reading this morning, my colleague, Marisol, speaks to this idea of comadres y compadres. She notes the difference that occurs in culture, particularly between English and Latinx culture around our definition of family. And I'll just note that the word Latinx may not be familiar to you. As our understanding of gender evolves, we're now using Latinx rather than Latino or Latina, because it offers more spaciousness for gender identity. So in many ways, her description of a more expansive view of family in Latinx culture illustrates a greater sense of interdependence, of connection, of shared responsibility for one another. In this idea, these relationships are an invitation to this intricate web of connection that transcends bloodlines and shared DNA. Many of us have known Judys or Alices in our lives, people who helped raise us, who are not related to us by blood or adoption, or friends we've made in adulthood who've become like siblings, or communities like this one that give us a sense of home, of solace, of care, of being held. Sometimes these relationships have a stronger bond than the ones in our family of origin. Sometimes they've been balms to our old scars or our wounds, helping us to find healing and acceptance when we haven't found that in our family of origin. And sometimes these relationships have blossomed because of a shared experience of wonder or of joy. Sometimes they've grown from a shared experience of fear or failure or oppression or tragedy. And sometimes they stem from a sense of call to care for and to be cared for by others. Through these experiences, we come to acquire and collect people into our chosen family, our circle, our tribe. These experiences and the resulting relationships widen the definition of family and our experience of it. As we explore our theme of kinship, how do we define that idea or breathe life into it as a concept? Who do we count as the people in our family, our circle, our tribe? The answers to those questions can change, depending on the circumstances, our culture, the ways we have learned to see ourselves in relation to others. Sebastian Younger, author of the book Tribe, on Homecoming and Belonging, reflects on the ways that things like events and circumstances bond us to one another or leave us feeling that we don't belong. He writes, "Human beings need three basic things in order to be content. They need to feel competent at what they do. They need to feel authentic in their lives. They need to feel connected to others. These values are considered intrinsic to human happiness and far outweigh extrinsic values like beauty and money and status." In other words, we need to know that other people have our back, that they notice us, that we matter. And sometimes that feel of connection happens in our family of origin, meaning the family we were born into or adopted into, the family we've been raised in. And sometimes we find that sense of connection and belonging elsewhere. Sometimes circumstances have a big impact on our sense of belonging. Younger reflects on the ways that human beings are drawn to one another in the face of disaster. He writes, "Disasters create a community of sufferers that allow individuals to experience an immensely reassuring connection to others." This is why we feel a sense of connection with others after events like September 11th, terrorist attacks, hurricanes, other natural disasters. It is those times that people will open their homes to neighbors they barely know and people they've never even met. It's in those times that it doesn't matter who's related to you by blood, marriage, or adoption. We have a familial sense of connection to every person, perhaps because our very lives depend on it. As a result, we're able to tear down the artificial barriers we've created that prevent us from doing this exact thing all the time. This past Thursday, as was mentioned, in my hometown of North Andover, Massachusetts, which is north of Boston, random explosions were occurring in the gas lines. The fires and explosions started in the city of Lawrence, which is just next door, and then continued to the other two towns. Houses exploded randomly. Some caught fire, others were consumed with smoke. There were over 100 fires and explosions in the span of hours, and at least one person was killed. My entire family of origin lives there. My parents, my sisters, my brothers-in-law, my nieces, my nephew. Houses in their neighborhood were impacted, and they all use the same gas company. They had to evacuate. Everyone's fine. They're a little shaken up, but physically okay. And the home that I grew up in, where my parents still live, is okay. My sister's homes are safe. But within minutes of this hitting the news and hitting social media, people started showing up. They were texting me and my family, offering their homes, posting on social media that if I knew anyone who needed a place to stay, they were welcome. The local animal shelter opened its doors for pets. My brother-in-law, who had gotten home from work, went around turning off the gas lines at the meters outside people's homes in his neighborhood, making sure they were safe. The neighbors across the street from my parents' house went to check on them. They all got to safety. The locally owned grocery store wheeled out a dozen carts of hot dogs and hamburgers and buns and grills and other food, and they prepared hundreds of meals for the first responders from around the county who were showing up to deal with this disaster. Now, I lift these stories up to highlight the reality that in those moments, it didn't matter that my brother-in-law hadn't met half of his neighbors whose homes he potentially saved. It didn't matter that neighbors who had fought earlier in the week because one of them was mowing the lawn around dinner time and it was too loud, they still checked on each other and helped each other evacuate. It didn't matter that some lawns had red political signs on them and some had blue. It mattered that people got to safety and lived. We see this all the time. With hurricanes and earthquakes, the wildfires in California, Hurricane Florence in the Carolinas, the aftermath, countless other events that have happened, people choosing to look past the differences we create in our minds that keep us apart and declaring that everyone is family in those moments. Now, I'm not naive enough to believe that this spirit of unity will last forever. We've seen this enough to know that eventually people will go back to their regular daily lives and much of that sense of unity will subside. But some of it lingers. Some of that realization lingers, that reminder that we all have common needs as human beings, to feel a sense of competency in our lives, to feel that we are living authentically, to feel connected to others, to belong to someone. We realize that our commonality is bigger and deeper than we usually acknowledge, that our family is bigger than we sometimes realize when we're consumed with our daily tasks and our busy schedules, that there are people who we have let into our circles that are our chosen family, even when we don't realize it. That our circle of kinship is larger and more expansive than we imagined before. That perhaps the neighbors who become family in those instances, in those stressful moments, could grow to be our chosen family into the future. If some of our relationships are created through shared experience, then certainly the shared experience of a tragedy is one of those bonding moments. These shared moments of crisis can expand the way we define our circle and perhaps allow us to invite others in who we wouldn't have invited otherwise. As Unitarian Universalists, we affirm the journey of faith that each of us is on, and this means that for many of us, our beliefs and ways of making meaning will shift and grow and change over time. And we also affirm that our experiences help to inform our beliefs and vice versa, that in essence, Faith is a relational idea that can grow and change with time and experience. It seems logical, then, that our ways of defining family or our circle of support and love might also shift and change over time. Each of us may define family differently or have a different sense of who is included in our family. So I wonder, who is your family? Who are your chosen people, your chosen circle? When are the times in your life when you've realized someone holds that space for you? Have you told them that? That they're like a sibling to you, that they are like a parent? Perhaps it's time to do that, to let them know that they are like family. Perhaps it's time for us to let the people we care for most know that they are our comadres y compadres, that they are our familia. Perhaps it's time to get to know our neighbors in our neighborhoods, in our workplace, in our congregation. These are the people with whom we share our lives. As we reflect on this idea of kinship, of family, of chosen family, let us be ever mindful of the people that help to complete our circles. Let us open ourselves to the possibility of family in every person we meet. Let us journey through this life with gratitude for those who have shaped us and openness to those who might shape us in the future. Let us do so with love and with hope in our hearts. So may it be. Amen. Blessed be.